This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a celebration of a restored architectural delight, a middle-aged romantic comedy, or a spiritually renewing visual art exhibit, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Finishing touches are being made before Thursday night's reopening of the Orpheum Theater. Eileen Fleming reports the $13 million renovation has been underway for nearly 2 years.
The last time the doors were open at the Orpheum Theater was August 27, 2005, when there were preparations underway for a play scheduled to open that weekend. Hurricane Katrina made sure that didn't happen. 10 years later, a preview party was hosted for friends of the new owners, Roland and Mary von Kernatowski and Dr. Eric George. Now, the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra will be returning for the grand opening. They had performed for years at the Orpheum before Katrina. Other entertainers were on the bill decades past, in the days of vaudeville. General Manager Kristen Shannon is familiar with every part of the theater. During a recent tour, she recalled what it looked like after the storm and what needed help first.
The first floor seats were gone. Those were the main damage, but that water was really in here for a brief amount of time and then out. The great news was when we looked at the architectural detail and all of the details of this ornate ceiling that you're looking at and the beautiful proscenium, this Beaux Arts architecture, you know, this was all intact. I mean, this wasn't damaged. There wasn't a lot of water coming in. Some of the exit doorways with those gorgeous plaster work, some of that was damaged, and we did repair and restore that plaster. And then, of course, the owner's wife, one of the owners, Roland von Kernatowski, his wife is a decorative artist, Mary von Kernatowski, and she went through, researched all the original paint colors, and then was able to recreate those facades and make them look gorgeous. And the other owner is Dr. Eric George.
Standing at the top floor of the second balcony, it's a steep step down to the seating, but that ensures no blocked views. Shannon says the renovation had to not only polish the Orpheum's architectural gems, but had to include modern amenities. There are now 6 bars, bathrooms on every floor, and 1,500 new seats. Job Superintendent Brett Olive has been working throughout the renovation, and he quickly discovered that the theater was something special to people. Several curious passersby walked in off the street during the restoration.
There was quite a few stories about dance recitals held here, you know. I don't know the particulars, but there was a lot of stories about dance recitals and little kids, you know, coming up here on stage and performing, and what a great place this was.
And then they would come to you as adults and ask to take a peek inside?
Yeah. Yes, a lot of people did.
Shannon has a story of her own.
My favorite memory is Handel's Messiah, where we'd have full chorus on stage. It was the holidays, and you would almost inevitably go over to the Roosevelt first and or after and experience their beautiful lobby all decorated. And then the orchestra would perform Handel's Messiah with the symphony chorus. So I did. I performed with them about 3.5 years.
The modern changes include a ground floor that she says will transform the space from theater to Mardi Gras ball to wedding reception for 300 guests. It lifts up to be level with the stage. She explains how it works.
So we are walking onto where you see this hinge point. This is where the slope begins. When we turn one electric switch, this floor goes down 44 inches and will be at a slope, an incline, for our theater seating. And these chairs are removable. So they come in for the when the slope is down and for an orchestra performance or for a play. We have to be quiet. Or some shows like Dwight Yoakam will have full seats in the orchestra. And then we remove these completely and the floor comes back up. Those are stage extensions. So they meet that extension and then you can walk literally from the front door to the back wall of the theater backstage, all on the same level.
I see. It's coming up to meet the stage.
It's coming up to meet
not the stage going down to meet the floor.
Yes, yes. So very unique. And it was an engineering feat of genius on the part of our construction crew. There's really no other floor like it. And hopefully, you know, it can be a model for other theaters looking to do something similar. But it is going to be an amazing feature.
Olive says the structure posed some tough problems. What's been the most challenging part?
Everything's been challenging because you're introducing all new mechanical in an old building, and we, everything's been a challenge because nothing fit the way the engineers, you know, it's all been a challenge. But I think the floor was a big challenge. The gallery upstairs where we took out the old concrete and put new structural steel in was a big challenge, you know.
And what are you going to be pointing out to your family and friends when they come and see it?
Mostly just how pretty the stuff that you can see is. And luckily, that was in pretty good shape. I mean, we had to totally re-skim all the plaster and repaint everything. But in a whole, it was in pretty good shape.
She was asking if we were going to be ready for next Thursday for the symphony's opening night. I said, absolutely.
Oh, definitely. We don't have a choice.
We're excited to hear it. Actually, they're going to load in for their first rehearsal on Tuesday, and they decided that they wanted to bring the musicians in a day early just to walk through because they felt like it was going to be such an emotional experience for most of them to return, that they want them to be able to kind of walk around and get a sense of the space before they actually try to rehearse and make music.
So there you go. Now you have to be ready.
We will be ready.
Okay.
I can guarantee it.
The Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra will be performing Mahler's Resurrection Symphony when the Orpheum reopens for business Thursday night. For WWNO Inside the Arts, I'm Eileen Fleming.
A schedule of upcoming performances is available on the theater's website, OrpheumNola.com. Could you use a good laugh? Well, Southern Rep Theater may fill the bill as it opens its new season with a romantic farce, the regional premiere of acclaimed playwright Sarah Rule's Stage Kiss. Joining me now to talk about this hilarious romp are actors Aimé Hayes and Trey Bervant. Welcome.
Hi, Diane. Thank you.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
This is not the first time that Southern Rep has produced one of Sarah Rule's plays.
No, that's correct. We started off with The Clean House in 2008, and then we did In the Next Room or the Vibrator Play in 2011. And I love that the New Orleans audiences are so excited to see the next Sarah Rule play. And I really think this is her at the top of her game, especially the comedy is killer.
Now, Aimé, you are wearing two hats as artistic director, and you're also acting in a leading role in this production. What attracted you to this work?
Well, I think this is a great role for me where I am right now. It's about a middle-aged actress who doesn't work that much coming back into the game after having a child, and it seemed like the right kind of play for right now.
And Trey, what about you?
You always want to find those roles where you can identify where you are in your life. And, you know, a lot of times when you're younger, you're always asked to play these older roles, especially when you're coming up in your 20s and so on. So to be in your mid-40s and to play a role that was written for someone in their mid-40s in exactly some of the circumstances that you find yourself in, it is very self-reflective.
And it's a romantic lead, too, for both of us, which, you know, when you get past a certain age, you're not the romantic lead.
Right.
It's great that this is a middle-aged love story.
Yes, and when there are wigs involved, it's always fun.
So how do art and life merge in this production?
These two people were together 20 years ago. They broke up badly. They haven't seen each other in 20 years or communicated. They both get cast in this play opposite each other as ex-lovers. And so the first day of rehearsal, he shows up and she shows up and complications ensue. And so the play, the 1930s melodrama, which is the play within the play, it's sort of like a Betty Davis movie, lots of soap and tears and high melodrama kind of thing. They sort of fall in love again through the play.
Is there something you can share from the production?
Sure. Oh, this is a lot of fun. In the play, on the first day of rehearsal, the two leads are expected to have a stage kiss. And so these two people haven't seen each other 20 years, ended badly, and all of a sudden they have to do one of the most intimate things you can do on stage. So they say to the director, "You want us to do this today?" And he says, "Yes." So we'll do a quick little bit from that, from the 1930s melodrama into the scene.
"Oh, to hell with that. To hell with the past and the future."
"Oh, that was hostile.
What?
Did you brush your teeth this morning? The kiss is weird over here. I don't know. What if the fight is by the grandfather clock, and then we sort of do like this, and then the kiss ends up being by the window? Okay? All right, I'll start. You must leave."
"To hell with the past and the future. To hell with all that."
I think it's more of a...
Or, you know, I could sort of...
You know, there's no transition into the kiss. What if I, I don't know, slap him first?"
"Okay. To hell with the past and the future. To hell with all that."
Was that okay? Which one did you like best?
I preferred the second.
I like the first one best.
What is being examined in your roles, both on and off the stage?
When you're an actor trying to do a good job as an actor in a play, playing an actor who's trying to do a really good job as an actor in a bad play, it gets really confusing. And so there's moments where the other part of the dialogue is commenting on your performance, and it gets to be so real that inside you go, does she really mean that I'm a bad actor right now? Or is she just doing that as part of the character? It's a lot of fun because you get to navigate these roles within this framework of how I am as an actor in life, and then how would this actor, you know, conduct himself in a rehearsal process. So it is, you start to step back and go, okay.
Yeah. Who am I? What I love about Sarah Rule's work is that, and it's something I feel passionately about, that comedy is the best way to look at life. It just opens you up. This is a really funny play within a play, and then there's another play within the play. But along the road, what she's really dealing with, or what happens when you get to middle age and the kids are leaving home and you've been with your husband or your partner for 20 years and romance sort of calls back. How do you deal with that as a human being? And I feel like she has such compassion for people and for people who fall in love that it sometimes is this sort of magic, tricky thing. How did that happen? How did I end up with her? How did I end up with him? And it's kind of beautiful how she lets these characters kind of fumble and stumble their way through their hearts and their broken hearts.
It's not just any moment in life. You're also reflecting back on a time when, as it concerns young love, everything is simple and pure and optimistic. You can only go up. But when the world starts to complicate things and you start to look back on that time, you yearn for it and you try to replicate it. And it's not as easy as it sounds. And that's where the device of comedy and the artifice of this play and the metaphysicality of it all really starts to create this whole world that you just get to live in and spin through. And it's been a lot of fun.
I would love to be in the backseat of Car Rides Home after this, because I think it will make you just love the person you're with even more.
It's interesting because I think people you get to these things in these quiet moments when you start to reflect on your past life. And, you know, nowadays people, you know, give their fantasies username and passwords. And this is a moment in time where it just lives inside your head and you start to create that. And then you have this opportunity to act on it and you get to see what the realities are of acting on that.
Yeah.
So what would you say is the big takeaway from this play?
Love the one you're with. I think it's being true to yourself and also being honest and mature and adult about the choices that you've made and being responsible for yourself and for your heart.
Mm-hmm. Amy Hayes and Trey Burbot star in Sarah Rule's Stage Kiss. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.
Stage Kiss opens Saturday and runs through October 10th at the Ashe Powerhouse, 1731 Barone Street. More info at southernrep.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A unique visual art exhibit at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center and Powerhouse explores the enduring spirituality of people of African descent. It's called Ashe to Amen and features works by more than two dozen artists. Joining me now is Ashe spokesman Luther Gray. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Diane. Thanks for having me.
This is a large exhibit that expands three galleries at Ashe. What was the intention of the curator, Dr. Leslie King Hammond, in bringing all of these works together?
She is an amazing doctor of art on the East Coast and some major universities, and this exhibit, I think, began in New York. She was astounded to find out that there were no exhibits really exploring the whole spirituality of Black people in America and around the world in major art exhibits. There was an assumption by the art world that these artists didn't have that body of work. So she created this exhibit herself. Wherever the exhibit goes, it takes on the personality of that local place. Ron Bichet, who's a professor of art at Xavier University, saw the exhibit in New York, and he called Carol Bebel from the exhibit and said, "Carol, I'm looking at an exhibit I think we have to bring to New Orleans because it's called Ashe to Amen." So 3 or 4 years later, here it is in New Orleans with two dozen of the greatest New Orleans artists of our generation.
Now, what does the title Ashe to Amen mean?
Both are sacred words. Ashe is a word in the Yoruba language of West Africa. That means the ability to make something happen. It's what we say at the end of a prayer. Like in Christianity, we say amen. Ashe means so be it. So when you say a prayer, you want the prayer to be answered. So you seal it by saying amen, that God is going to make this happen.
What did Dr. King Hammond bring together in the New Orleans exhibit?
You know, New Orleans has such deep African roots. And when she got together with Dr. Ron Bechet, Xavier has an immense collection of African art from Mali, West Africa, specifically the Dogon people, the ancient Dogon civilization. So when she met with Ron Bechet and Carol Bebel, she would talk about themes, and then Ron and Carol would say, "Well, we know an artist who does that work and an artist who does that work." The first gallery where the Dogon work is called Traditional. You're going to see ancient Dogon mask. You know, the Dogon are known for these immense masks that they had. I think one in the exhibit you'll see must be like almost a 20-foot-high alligator or crocodile. That is a mask, and when you put it on, it goes up 20 feet. These are antiquity pieces that go back 200 or 300 years. The second gallery of the work is called Diasporic, you know, how the African moved to the Caribbean or to New Orleans. And the third space is Contemporary, works by John Scott and Frank Hayden and Willie Birch. There's a piece of John Scott. It's an iron sculpture, Jesus hanging from the cross, but there's no cross. So he's hanging from the wall, like suspended in space. Leah Chase said to John about it, she said that was the most grotesque, ugly thing she'd ever seen. He says, "It was a lynching. What do you expect it to be, pretty?" He meant it to be disturbing. When you enter that exhibit, that's the first thing you see in that room. It's a journey. And so really to explain these journeys, Ashe has developed some programming over September and October to talk to visual artists and singers and dancers who do sacred dance, also to talk to ministers and of different denominations, have conversations between Christian, Muslim, and rabbis talking about the Christian Judeo concept. So we're really exploring a lot of spiritual and sacred topics, I think will help people to understand the art. You know, oftentimes we can look at art, but we really don't know the depth of what it's trying to convey. Ron Bechet on Sunday, September the 20th, he's going to show a film from the Dogon called Hidden Treasures of African Art. Martin Payton is also going to be there that day to explain John Scott and Frank Hayden sculptures. Of course, he's a professor of art at Southern University in Baton Rouge.
And is there a catalog to go with the exhibit?
It's in printing. I think we'll have it by the 1st of October. It's about 14 essays from different artists of all genres in New Orleans, along with photography from the exhibit.
Now, within the exhibit, is there also an opportunity to see some Mardi Gras Indian suits?
We have two amazing Mardi Gras Indian suits. One is from Big Chief Daryl Montana from the Yellow Pocahontas. In fact, it's the suit that he wore this year, 2015. And as well, we also have Big Queen Sharice Harrison Nelson from the Guardians of the Flame. And she has a suit that really depicts what happened through Hurricane Katrina. We all are familiar with the Yellow Pocahontas and their three-dimensional aspects of their suits. But his crown is actually three crowns that are separate from each other. Oh. And he says that the Smithsonian is interested in this piece. So I think when it leaves this exhibit, it may end up being in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. This crown is not just something around his face. It's like from head to toe. And so it almost gets to the point where you can look at that and then go see the Dogon in the beginning and say, wow, look at this and look at that. You know, like, so this one is contemporary, one is ancient, but how can someone make that and wear it? How can someone from the Dogon put a crocodile mask on? The sort of face of the crocodile is on his face, but the body of the crocodile is vertical about 15 to 20 feet. And you're wearing this, and it's made out of wood. And I think the traditions are identical because in the Dogon and in Mardi Gras Indians, they just don't put it on in a museum. They wear it in the streets. It's part of a ceremony. These things are worn and danced with. And I think this is also a real link to the Ashe, to Amen, is that how in New Orleans we still have these processions and we still do these things on Sundays and we still have Indians and we have jazz funerals, which in Africa they call them, you know, the honor of the ancestors in Congo, they call it Bambula. You know, we have the Bambula here, which became the second line. So all these traditions in New Orleans, I think they traversed probably the last 500 years at least.
What would you say will resonate most with viewers after seeing the exhibit?
Some of the art is just jaw-dropping. When someone goes through this, it can't help but inspire us to dwell more into our soul. And I think oftentimes in this rat race we're in, we spend so little time with our soul. If we can just meditate on our soul, all our answers can be found there because that's the link between us and God. But if we're always trying to figure out on the physical world or in the mental world, we can trick ourselves sometimes. But when we slow ourselves down and go into the spirit world, to the Ashe, to Amen world, I think we find what our really purpose in life is, and I hope that's what people will get from this exhibit.
Ashe spokesman Luther Gray, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Ashe to Amen, the enduring spirituality of people of African descent, is on view at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, 1712 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. More info at Ashe, ashecac.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.